Okay, I'm sorry, Rabbi Yisai. We're going to try again. Again, we are in Shara Avoida Selikim. Premise of the Shara Avoida Selikim. We finished Perek Zayin. Perek Zayin, there's a few different, rather fundamental pieces here. I want to recap briefly what we've seen in Perek Zayin, and that is the following. After having learned the Chavis Alvavis's great principle that Hashem's goodness to us is meant to be reflected in our efforts toward Hashem. The more goodness we received, the more we should be stepping up our efforts. Leaving it at that can be very overwhelming because you have no idea, am I justifying the good, or am I not justifying the good? The Chavis Alvavis gave us 10 points to keep in mind, which make you justify the goodness that you get from Hashem. Now, I want to again clarify, as we keep clarifying, when we say that it justifies it, it doesn't mean that it actually pays for it. We'll always be over our heads in terms of our debt to Hashem. But what we mean is that Hashem does goodness because he wants to do goodness for those who he likes. And he wants to see certain responses. And by following these 10 steps, we make ourselves the type of person that Hashem says, this is what I envisioned. When I do this goodness, this is what I envisioned. This is what I wanted to see. So briefly, what are those 10 steps? What are those 10 points? The number one is, do not use Hashem's goodness against him. Don't use talents, money, abilities, other benefits that you receive from Hashem for Averis, for the wrong things. That's number one. Number two, make it a habit to be expressing gratitude to Hashem. Hashem should be a regular part of our lexicon, and expressing thanks and gratitude to Hashem should also be. Number three, never denigrate, never put down benefit that you got from Hashem. Number four, five, and six are revolving around the same point. Never lose sight of where the benefit is coming from, and don't make the mistake of attributing the benefit, the good that you get from Hashem, to a medium. That can mean three things. If you're getting it from a person, don't attribute it to the person. Remember that the person is just a medium that Hashem is using to get it to you. Don't attribute it to your own talent. And also, don't attribute it to the means. Meaning, don't say, wow, the stock market is such a wonderful thing. That's where I got my money from. You always have to remember that the source of your goodness, the source of your benefit, is Hashem. He may choose a different person as the conduit. He may provide you with talents and abilities that will enable you to get his good. And sometimes he'll do it some other means, but never make the mistake of stopping short at the medium, whether that medium is you, some other means, or some other person. Always remember where the true source comes from. That was number four, five, and six. Number seven, never look down on a person who did not receive the good that you got. Never look down on a person who doesn't have your gift, whether he's less intelligent, less well-to-do, less in other areas. Number eight. Don't let Hashem's benefit, the goodness to you, distract you from his service. If Hashem gives you benefits that make you very busy, don't forget to daven, etc. Number nine is the matter of perspective, of where our focus is. As we discussed, you always want to have your focus on, always be looking at people who have less than you materially and people who are doing more than you spiritually. Even though that actually goes counter to the natural way of looking at things, which is, I'm always looking at people who have more than me in the hope that maybe I get it, and that makes me be less appreciative of what I have. And I look at people who do less than me spiritually, and I feel that I'm doing fine. And even more than that, sometimes we'll naturally have a tendency to resent people who are doing more than us spiritually because it makes us feel inadequate. But he's telling us, if you really want to justify Hashem's goodness, so there are two pieces, there's two aspects. First of all, you want to sense that you're getting goodness, and you do that by looking at people who have less than you, materially. And you also want to sense indebted. That's what Hashem wants from you. He wants you to feel indebted. He wants you to feel like you should be dedicating yourself more to Him. Live with that sense. How do you do that? You do that by looking at somebody who's doing more than you. You look at those are the people you want to be around. Those are the people you want in your frame of reference. And therefore, you'll always feel the urge, the spur to do more. Very, very interesting. On Shabbos, I met somebody who broke his wrist in a very painful way. And he's now going through physical therapy to try to regain it was also not in use for a while. Going through physical therapy to try to regain the maximum use of his wrist. They said that it's something very fascinating. Said that if the therapist will tell him, okay, bend your wrist as far as it could go. He might go like that and say, okay, it's just impossible. I can't get it any further than this. And, okay, forget about it. It's impossible to do this right now. This is the best I can do right now. Okay? But then he said, when the therapist actually works with lines, like you put your hand down on a surface, and there are lines there, she says, I want you to get it up to this line. He only can get it like this right now, but when there's actually that line there and he sees the line in front of him, he's able to push a little more and actually get to the line. And then you set goals in terms of the lines, a little higher, a little higher. And he said that it's an amazing thing how without anything there, without anything to measure by, you think that you can only do until here. But you actually see a line and you're told to aim for that line. You see the line, the tangible line in front of you. You can push higher than you thought you really could. He said the psychology there is very fascinating. And you know what? This is so true in Ruchnius also, and that is the major importance of being around people who are on higher levels than us. It's very easy to reach a situation where you feel like, I'm doing everything I should be doing, everything I can be doing, and there isn't really much more that can be expected of me. And very often, it's just because of the fact that in your circle, you are from the higher performers. But if you move yourself into a higher performing circle spiritually, you'll suddenly see that by nature, your capacity will be expanded, and you'll be pushing yourself more because you see tangible gauges in front of you. So this is what the Chavis HaLavavis is telling us. You want to set your sights on the people who have less than you materially and on the people who are doing more than you spiritually. Okay. We move on. That was number 9. And number 10 was not to kiviyachon, and use very, very human terms here. Shouldn't really use these terms for Hashem, but to get the point across. Don't test Hashem's patience. Meaning, we all know that we have things to improve. Hashem often operates that He sends painful reminders. And the person whose sensitivities are in the right place wakes up through those painful reminders. You have to realize, by the way, that if you get a painful reminder, that itself is a sign that Hashem has faith in you. And trust that you are attuned enough to wake up as a result. I'll tell you a humorous little anecdote in this regard. The Beis Halevi, the Beis of Dov Soloveitchik, the father of the whole Soloveitchik dynasty. He was a very, very tough Rav. He was a tough Rav. and, you know, didn't flatter anybody, said everything exactly as it was, very blunt. And there was one fellow who, I don't know exactly what the issue was, but there was some sort of behavior of his that was not what it should have been. And the Beis Halevi used to tell him off. The Beis Halevi used to tell him off regularly and consistently. He used to tell him off sharply. This fellow's never improved. His behavior never changed. One day, the Beis Halevi met him in the street, and all of a sudden, the Beis Halevi said to him, I want to ask you for forgiveness for all the times I yelled at you, all the times I told you off. This was already a surprise, because the Beis Halevi... Well, it wasn't common to hear this from the Beis Halevi. But the person looked at the Beis Halevi, and he said, well, in all honesty, I have to acknowledge that it was really coming to me. You know, you were right in the things you said. So the Beis Halevi told him, once again, very bluntly, he said, I know I'm right, and I know you deserved it. But I was telling you all those things in the course of all this time. I told you all those things in the hope that it would change you. I've reached the conclusion that you're not going to change. If you're not going to change anyways, then I shouldn't have told you anything in the first place, and therefore I'm asking for your forgiveness. This is the point that we're making here. You have to understand that the very fact that a mentor would tell you off is a sign that they have faith in you. So when Hashem does send a painful reminder, a painful wake-up call, that's a sign that Hashem has faith in you. But we all know that there are various areas that can use improvement. And nevertheless, Hashem keeps giving all kinds of different benefits also, goodness also, things that are stable in our lives that could chas v'shalom suddenly get a very big shake, but Hashem doesn't do it. And the test is, are you able to beat the reminder? Don't let the fact that Hashem is patient with you lull you into inactivity. You want to be able to show Hashem, Hashem, I realize that I could use a reminder or two. I realize that I can use a reminder or two, but I don't need it. I'm going to remind myself. I'm going to wake myself up. And this is the 10th condition of the Chavis HaLevav is telling us. Don't allow Hashem's goodness to you and the fact that he's not taking it away and the fact that he's doing that good to you on an ongoing basis, don't allow that to lull you into inactivity and to not improve the things that need to be improved. You keep conscious on your own. Tell Hashem, Hashem, you can keep giving me the good. I'm going to be on top of my own case, and I'll make sure to spur myself to action where it's necessary. Those, the Chavis HaLevav tells us, are the 10 points. That if we can keep to those, if we can try to keep conscious of those, then we are the type of people that Hashem wants to be doing chesed for. When the people who can demonstrate these 10 points, Hashem says, oh, that's what I wanted to see when I'm doing chesed. Okay. Now we're going to move on. We're going to move on. Perek Ches is a complex perek discussing one of the classic philosophical puzzles. I'm not going to actually read through it. We'll say it outside. We won't spend too much time on it. Let's see. Many of the Kadmainim discuss the classic question of, it's usually expressed as Yediyah and Bechira. If Hashem knows the future, then he knows what I'm going to do in 5 minutes. How does that coincide with the principle of free will? How could it be that I'm really free to do whatever I choose, which is a very, very fundamental point in Yiddishkeit? I'm free to make my own choices. When Lamaisa, Hashem knows already now what I'm going to do tomorrow. How do these two fundamental principles come together? And both of these are very, very fundamental principles in our faith. So again, this is generally expressed in terms of Yediyah and Bechira. How does Yediyah, Hashem's knowledge, how does that work together with Bechira, my own free choice to choose as I wish? The Chavis HaLevav uses the terms Hechreach v'tzedek, inevitability versus righteousness. Meaning if there's an inevitable plan, Hashem knows exactly what's going to happen, how does that leave room for my own righteousness? If Hashem decides already knows that I'm going to do this, make the right decision, I'll make the right decision. If he already knows that I'm going to make the wrong decision, I'm going to make the wrong decision. How do the two principles come together? This is a famous, classic, ancient puzzle that's discussed by many of the Rishonim, of the philosophers. And here the Chovos HaLevavos has his own discussion on it. Again, we're not going to see it inside. It's lengthy, it's philosophical. But I want to just relay the Chovos HaLevavos' take on this outside. And I'll just say that personally for me, the Chovos HaLevavos' approach resonated most with me. I just want to make this clear. This is a subject that's discussed by the greatest of Rishonim. So Chas v'Shalom, I'm not here coming here to grade things. All I'm coming to say is that in terms of how it hit me, my small mind and heart most fit well with the way the Chovos HaLevavos puts it down. And this is what I'm going to, Bezras Hashem, we'll give it over here outside without actually reading it inside. The Chovos HaLevavos says something amazing, because the way I found it was that the Chovos HaLevavos turns it around, and instead of leaving it as a puzzle that at the end of the day you can never really understand it, he turns it into such an inspiring flash of insight as to who we're dealing with when we're talking about Hashem. And basically he says as follows. You have to be ready to wrap your mind around this. He says as follows. He says, we all understand that when we talk about Hashem, we're talking about something that's beyond our comprehension, right? Meaning, when we talk about Hashem's wisdom, so where the Chovos HaLevavos puts it, the way the Kuzari puts it and others, it's not that, let's say my IQ is, I don't even know what our IQ numbers is, so, you know, I'm not going to make a fool out of myself. I'll just talk about a scale of 1 to 100. Let's say my IQ is 85, okay? So Hashem's IQ is like a million, right? He's much, 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 much wiser than me. The Chovos HaLevavos and the Kuzari say, no, it's not that Hashem, has to understand that in any quality that we can ever talk about, Hashem is so beyond, it's not that he is way ahead on the same spectrum. It's a whole different concept. When we talk about the wisdom of Hashem, we don't have any of it. It's a whole different entity. It's a whole different concept. This is something philosophical, abstract, a little tough to wrap our minds around. The same goes for Hashem's might. It's not that human beings have power up until this point, and Hashem's power is much, much, much greater than that. Hashem's might is of a completely different kind. There's no comparability. Not just that it's much more. It's something completely different. We talk about it as might. We use the same word that we use for our own might because we have to relate to it somehow. But really, might, wisdom, these terms are inherently inappropriate for Hashem because might and wisdom are things that we have. Whatever Hashem is something that we don't have. And therefore, it's just something completely different. Because once again, Hashem is beyond our comprehension. So now let's take this a step further. I'm going to try to approach it, giving a simpler mashal, and then get to the immensity of the Chovos HaLevavos' point. How much is 2 plus 2? 2 plus 2 is 4. It has to be 4. It can't be any otherwise, right? That's just the way it is. Now, why is it like that? But here, the Chovos HaLevavos, basically, the point that he's going to tell us is that it's like that because that's what logic dictates. Logic is now something created by Hashem. Meaning any logic that we deal with, we are limited to logic, but that logic itself doesn't bind Hashem. Logic is itself something that Hashem created. It's part of our reality, but that reality is something created. Any givens in our reality were created by Hashem, even logical ones. They're created by Hashem, and therefore Hashem isn't bound by them. Hashem is beyond them. They're within the box of Hashem's creation. 2 plus 2 did not have to be 4. Just in the reality that Hashem created, part of that reality, built into that reality, is that 2 plus 2 could only be 4. There's no other way about it. But that's all within a created reality. It's within what Hashem created. Hashem could have created a reality which we cannot relate to at all. where 2 plus 2 equals 1.5. How could that possibly be? Well, it can't in the reality that Hashem created for us. Hashem could have created a reality of a completely different nature. And there, 2 plus 2 would obviously be 1.5. Now, if we can understand that, then we go on to say the following. And here's the Chavis of Avos's big punch. He says, what's the problem? That logically, the two don't fit. If Hashem knows the future, then how could it be that I still have free will to decide one way or the other? He said, the problem is that logically the two don't fit. But Hashem is not bound by our logic. That logic itself, the fact that it's a contradiction, is within the reality that Hashem created. But Hashem is beyond that reality. Where He is, it's not inevitable that the two are a conflict. We can't understand it. That's fine. On the contrary, it gives us deeper insight into the fact, into what we mean when we say that Hashem's wisdom, it's not wiser than us, it's something completely different. That Hashem is way beyond the box of our reality and the logic that holds, that reigns supreme in that reality. It's only within that reality. Outside of that reality, that logic is not binding. Somehow the two don't conflict. How could that possibly be? Well, we're in that box of reality, so we don't know that. But Hashem is above and beyond that. Beyond that, the two are not a contradiction. Now, okay, this is philosophical. That's why I don't want to spend too much time on it. If you appreciated the point, good. If not, don't worry about it too much. Just move on. Okay. Now, we just moved through the eighth perek in very short. So we usually move slowly. Today, we did amazing speed. And I want to move on to the ninth perek. And this, as well, is a very, very fundamental and classic piece of Chavis of Avos. So now, we'll start learning the ninth perek inside, and then we're going to move into a classic mashal that, once again, I'm going to say outside. I'm not going to actually read it inside. So Amar HaNefesh, if you remember, we're in the middle of a dialogue. This is a person consulting with himself. It's a person consulting with his seichel, with his intellect, and trying to navigate his path in getting closer to Hashem. So, Amar HaNefesh. The Nefesh says, it's the person self says, to the seichel, Vani chamtani b'ma sheyi'ashtani mehasig min hadavar hazeh. You have made me comfortable with the fact that I cannot understand this concept. Referring back to the discussion we just had about the conflict between Hashem knowing the future and Hashem leaving it up to you to make the right decision. He said, you've made me comfortable with my inability to understand it. L'dakusoy v'emek inyoni, because of its depth. Ach galeli soyd inyoni. He says, to forget it, I'm not going to try to figure out the broad philosophical questions of how our logic plays in Hashem's world. That's beyond us. But you know what? Let me understand my own essence. V'akavona b'hamodosi b'olam hazeh. I want to understand my place in this world. And he gives a mashal. In asking the question, he gives a mashal that is a very, very classic mashal of Chavis of Avos. And here, I'm going to once again step outside of the Sefer and just say it outside instead of reading the words here, because the point is to understand the mashal. He gives a mashal as follows, which encapsulates our existence in this world. He says there was an island that they had a strange way of operating. People, I'm adding a few details to the mashal that come from other Sfarim, or whatever it is, the mashal is like this. This was an island that was basically out in the middle of nowhere, and people would regularly, it was a relatively common occurrence that people would get shipwrecked and get washed up on that island. It would happen, when I say regular, I don't mean every week. It would happen every year or so. Someone would get shipwrecked and washed up on the island. So they had a very interesting custom. If a person got washed up on their island, they would go out to make a royal reception, and they would crown the person king. They would crown the person king. Tell him, now this island belongs to you. You are our king. We are all your subjects. Okay? Now, how did it work? What would happen was, and this was the secret of this island's prosperity, they would put all the resources of the island at this man's disposal. Now, this person suddenly finds himself crowned king, he'd be thrilled. Whatever his previous life was about, it's a better year. And therefore, what he would immediately try to do was bring his family over and bring whatever resources he had, whether he had a business, whatever he had abroad, he would try to bring it into this island, and he would put efforts into bringing things from his previous place of residence to building up this island, to investing in his stay in this island. He's the king here now. And he'd spend a lot of time importing, bringing his wealth, bringing his estate over, etc. And then, after about a year, they would put him back on a boat and send him off, and that would be that. And then they'd wait for the next person to get shipwrecked. This way, the island was constantly prospering. People were bringing things into the island. For the year that this person was in power, his wish was their command. They'd do whatever he wanted. And invariably, time after time, the poor guy would go and try to bring whatever he could from abroad onto this island until the day would come and he'd be put in a boat and sent back off to where he came from without being able to take anything along with him. And, okay, this was a painful procedure for the person. And then one person got shipwrecked. This person was a bit more intelligent and a bit more insightful than his predecessors. He suddenly finds himself being crowned king, put on a throne, given all kinds of powers, and he realized there's something here. What is going on here? So instead of immediately starting to invest in this, invest in that, he began investing in one particular advisor, one of the people in the court, showed him all kinds of favor, really did a lot for him, until one day he took him aside and told him, okay, we're very close now. What's going on here? Tell me what the secret is. And this advisor told the king the secret. He said, you're right. We're not just people with this bizarre custom. There's a very, very pragmatic intent here. The idea is that you're here for a limited amount of time. We want you to put all your energies into the island for that amount of time, and then you're going to get sent off. Don't tell anybody I told you, but yeah, by now you're down to about another 10 and a half months. You're going to be sent off after that. You're not going to be able to take anything with you. Aha! Okay. Now it all makes sense. This king now took the opposite approach of everybody around him. Everybody before him. Right now, this island, I am the absolute monarch here, and this entire island is at my disposal. He did exactly the opposite. He sent a letter to his wife and children telling them, I'm going to be delayed for another 10 and a half months. Stay home. Don't worry about me. Just go and rent as many warehouses as you can in our neighborhood. Then what did he do? He began a major export program, gathering all the resources he could. And he was busy exporting and exporting and exporting and sending everything he could off back to his hometown. And he really tapped into all the treasures of the island and all the different things that had been amassed by the poor losers who had been before him. He sent them off and sent them off and sent them off, kept his family busy. renting another warehouse and renting another warehouse to store all the wealth and the riches that he was busy sending off. And he knew that he's on borrowed time. And, you know, each export would take, I don't know, a couple of weeks to arrange. And as the time is coming closer, he knows that back home now he has wealth and riches waiting for him. He's going to live the rest of his life out in absolute luxury. But there's still a few more exports that he would like to arrange, that he'd like to cram in before he actually leaves. And by now he knows he has another 2 months here. He has another 2 months here. The clock is ticking. And as the time is getting closer, by now he knows, okay, in 6 weeks, I'm going to be sent off. In 5 weeks, in 3.5 weeks, in 3 weeks. And he's thinking of the day after. And the Chavis Salvava says he's thinking of the day off after with mixed feelings. On the one hand, this year has been a very, very intense year. He barely had time to sleep. He's been so busy exporting that he decided to forget about rest, health, everything that I'm going to worry about at the end of this year. Right now, I don't have the luxury for any of these things. I have to be awake 21 out of 24 hours, busy exporting, exporting, exporting. And as time is running out, he is thinking of the life he's going to live afterwards when he gets back home with all the wealth that he's amassed back at home, wasn't able to enjoy any of it yet. On the one hand, he's really looking forward. On the other hand, he's thinking, if I had another 4 months here, I could get so much more off. So there's mixed feelings. On the one hand, it's exciting. The thought of coming there and spending the rest of his life in luxury is exciting. On the other hand, he realizes that every day on this island provides so much opportunity for setting himself up for afterwards, he wouldn't mind having one more year, but he's not going to have it. So he wants to make sure to maximize all of his time. So, here I do want to move to the end of the mashal and actually read in the Chavis Halvavis. All the time that he stayed on that island, he had mixed feelings of sadness and excitement. On the one hand, he's sad that he's going to have to go so quickly, because there's so many more treasures on this island that he could theoretically, could potentially export. He's exporting as much as he can, but there's so much more that he could get off if he'd have the time. If he would be here for a bit longer, he'd be able to get off more. But on the other hand, he was rejoicing at the thought, picturing the day when he's actually going to leave the island and come back home and settle back in the place where he'd been sending those riches off the whole time. Right? And he's going to spend the rest of his life in that luxury. Chavis Halvavis said when that year was finally up, he was not caught by surprise. He wasn't devastated. On the contrary, when they told him, come, king, we have a boat waiting for you, he was excited. He got onto that boat, and he's looking forward to his arrival back home. He's not thinking, oh, wow, that was a great year, if only it could have lasted longer. He's very happy with the way he spent that year on the island. And he came back home to a life of luxury and ongoing happiness. So, this is the story of our life in this world. We come into this world, and we might feel like, oh wow, this is a great place. Let me spend my time setting myself up for the optimal existence in this world. And then, when suddenly it's time to go, you say, wait, this is my, what am I going to do now? But then you have the person in this world who keeps very, very conscious of his true home and is busy sending off packages, is busy exporting all the time, busy setting up my reality there, because that's where it's all really going to happen. And this is the essence of our existence in this world. Chavis Halvavis is going to elaborate on that a bit more, but The elaboration we'll get to after Pesach, but you know what? This is a perfect way to end before Pesach. Pesach is the day that it's the anniversary of our becoming Am Hashem. It's the anniversary of our becoming the people who are indeed given this fate, who are indeed given that reality of being bound up with Hashem and having that Olam Haba to look forward to. It's not like the rest of the world, which is basically, you are Mishpechos HaAdama, people of the earth, born from the earth, have a little bit of time, and then go back into the earth. Once we're bound up with Hashem, Hashem tells us, this is not really your home. Your home is really with me. Me and you are going to be living with a close bond and spend your time in this world just preparing for that, setting up that life, that real life afterwards. Every moment in this world is an opportunity to grab, like Chacham say, we're surrounded by riches on all sides. Mitzvahs are so available, so cheap, so plentiful, and we can constantly be sending off more and more to be setting ourselves up for the most ecstatic existence. And yeah, Pesach is the time where this began. Pesach is the time where us as a nation of Hashem were born. And Bezras Hashem will have this chus to really connect to the message of Pesach, to initiate a renewed level of that relationship with Hashem, of existence with Hashem, and to be zeicha to the ultimate good that He has in mind for us. Wishing everybody a Chag Kosher V'Sameach, Bezras Hashem.
Chag Kosher V'Sameach.